So, welcome to the next edition of the Rare Business Podcast. With me today, we have an old friend of the podcast, Stan Phelps, who's been on the podcast before. He is a customer experience, you know, best-selling author. He is a workshop leader, a thought leader. He's all these different sort of things. He's also a thoroughly, thoroughly nice kind of gentleman. But hi, Stan. How you doing?
Great to be here. Thanks for having me, Adrian.
You're very welcome. Now, despite the fact that you've been on the podcast before, Stan, I mean, for those that don't know you, can you tell us a little bit about you and a bit about the work that you do?
Sure. So I'm the founder of a think tank called Purple Goldfish, located over in the States in a place called the Research Triangle Park, which is in North Carolina. And I write and speak about the customer experience and the employee experience with a focus kind of on engagement, technology, and purpose.
Yeah. So the reason why we've come together, I mean, we talked before about, I mean, you do these series of books called, it's the Goldfish series, and it started with Purple Goldfish. And I think we talked about that, or definitely the blue one, if not the green one as well. But now you're on the Red Goldfish book, and the subtitle of that is Motivating Sales and Loyalty Through Shared Passion and Purpose. So can you tell me a little bit more about this book and so how it came about, who's it for, and what's its purpose, and so on and so forth?
Yeah, sure. So this is as you mentioned, this is actually the fifth color in kind of the series. The first three, and we've talked about this before, the colors were inspired by Mardi Gras,
right,
of all things. So it was purple, green, and gold. And that really talked about your customers, your employees. Gold was about your top 20% of employees. Blue was a focus on technology, data, and analytics. Red, though, which is the focus of this book, Red Goldfish, is all about purpose and how I believe going forward, purpose is going to become one of the ultimate differentiators in business.
Right.
And it's the simple idea that business can be a force for good in the world. The inspiration behind Red comes from a rock band of all places. Okay. In fact, Bono, the lead singer of U2, if you go back just 11 years ago, he and Bobby Shriver created a movement called the Red Campaign.
Right.
And they partnered with local partnered with pretty big brands. And the idea was simple. These brands would create a version of their product or service. It would be red, and a small portion of the proceeds of the sales of those products and services would go towards, in this case, for the Red Campaign, it was all about Africa, and to support different causes in Africa.
Okay. So, I mean, before we kind of get into it, I mean, can you explain to me what you mean by purpose and kind of why you think that's becoming increasingly important? Because I guess it's just so we get clear on what we're actually talking about here.
Sure. So the purpose, as we write about it in the book, is your North Star,
right,
in business. It's your reason for being. And I think, if we think about, if we go back, Adrian, just 30, 40, or 50 years ago, a lot of people talked about, the purpose of why a corporation exists.
Yes.
Was merely for its shareholders. And for maximizing profit for shareholders. And I think that's a very shallow way of looking at business. In fact, in the book, we call that the 1.0 model of business, where you're putting shareholder first.
Right.
And then the progression, I think the 2.0, and this started to develop in the 1980s, was all about focusing more on the customer first.
Right.
With the understanding that if you got that right, and that your true purpose was to get and to keep a customer, then the profits and the benefits to the shareholder would follow.
Right.
The 3.0 version, which I think has been really popularized in the last decade or 15 years is actually putting the employee first.
Right.
With the understanding that no matter how much you focus on the customer, if you don't have employees that are engaged, if you don't have employees that are bought in, it's going to be really hard to create that consistent experience for your customers.
Right.
And I think, right now to probably in the next 15 years, again, the 4.0 version is really about understanding your why in business, your overall purpose of why you exist,
mm-hmm.
and being able to do the little things, Adrian, to bring that purpose to life.
Right.
And a lot of that, I think, has been brought to the forefront by folks like Simon Sinek.
Right.
You know, Simon was famous for saying, through his book Start With Why, that people don't buy what you do or even how you do it, they buy why you do that.
Right.
And in the world we live in now, where everything is much more transparent, I think the burden is going to be on companies to be able to not only speak about why they exist, but to do it through their actions to prove their purpose and how to engage with people.
Mm-hmm. Okay. So I know that you do kind of, part of the process for each of these Goldfish books, you go through, you do a lot of research into different companies that have got this nailed or are showing glimpses of it and so on and so forth. And with also within the book, you talk about there's some patterns that have emerged, and you've been able to identify what we talk about, sort of eight different sort of archetypes. I mean, mm-hmm. can you explain a bit more about those archetypes, and quickly tell me about the eight patterns that have emerged and how you've named them?
Sure, absolutely. Let me give you one footnote before I jump into the eight.
Okay.
And why I think purpose, especially going forward, is going to be key, Adrian, is that the simple fact that we're only 3 years away, at least here in the U.S., and uh-huh. I'm assuming it would be the same in Europe, we're 3 years away. In 2020, the workforce here in the U.S. becomes 51% millennials.
Right.
And certain projections have that going up to upwards of 75% by the year 2025.
Right.
And millennials have a much different, I hate to generalize, but I would say the group of millennials have a much different view of business,
mm-hmm.
and their expectations are different for both the companies that they work for,
yeah,
as well as the brands that they do business with.
Right.
And they expect brands to be, to have a little bit more of a deeper purpose. So as you mentioned, we collected for this book, we've collected over 250 examples. We've looked at over 700 articles, 3,500 videos with my co-author Graham Newell and I.
Uh-huh.
And there was these kind of eight different patterns, or what we call archetypes,
uh-huh.
or how brands, and we, the kind of the progression of the eight is based on Maslow's hierarchy of needs.
Right. Okay.
And so I'll start, at that kind of base level of kind of safety is where the first archetype is. And that's what we call the protector.
Right.
And for the protector, it's all about standing up and protecting what's important. And that could be totally different for every brand, whether it's in the environment or a cause. So that's the protector.
Right.
The second type is what we call the liberator. And the liberator is about trying to fix a broken system. So this would be kind of an Uber type of company in the world. The third is the designer.
Mm-hmm.
And the designer is all about trying to create revolutionary products. So a brand like Apple would be in that designer.
Okay.
The fourth type is what we call the guide.
Uh-huh.
And the guide is all about facilitating individual progress. How do they help people along the path? So like a Google or maybe a Khan Academy would fall into that. The fifth type is the advocate. And the advocate is their purpose is to really stand up for a certain group or groups of people. So you'd look at brands like AARP, Panera, we have falling in that. The sixth type is the challenger.
Mm-hmm.
And the challenger, their purpose is to inspire individuals to be a greater version of themselves. They want to be a kind of change agent out there. A brand that represents that for us is Nike.
Right.
The seventh type is unifiers. Unifiers, they're all about trying to set the standard. They want people to join the movement. They're trying to lead the pack. And then the eighth type, Adrian, is at kind of the top of Maslow's hierarchy, is what we call the master. And brands that are at the top there, I mean, self-actualization or transcendence, they're brands that are looking to not only change lives, but they're also out there with a view towards improving the world mm-hmm. that we live in.
Okay. And so I tell you what, Stan, I mean, that's really useful. And you've name checked a couple of different kind of companies across these different archetypes. I'll tell you what would be useful is if you could give us maybe two or three examples of companies and what they're doing and therefore what sort of archetype they fit into, just to bring it sort of to life a bit more.
Sure. So, yeah, and the idea of a red goldfish is really with a focus on how you – the signature actions that they do to bring that to life. So – one of the brands that we talk about in that protector archetype, and each of the archetypes, Adrian, have kind of a symbol for them.
Right.
So our symbol for the protector archetype is Superman.
Okay.
And so a protector brand that we love is Patagonia.
Right, yeah.
And Patagonia is all about the environment, trying to create a more sustainable world.
Yes.
And one of the red goldfish that they do actually applies to their employees. So they have a program called Green Sabbaticals.
Mm-hmm.
And so if you're an employee at Patagonia, every employee gets 2 months of a paid leave that they can go and work for an environmental organization.
Right.
And it's a great way that I think they reinforce that mission and even broader than mission, their overall purpose.
Right.
I mentioned Apple before. Apple's in that designer brand archetype.
Mm-hmm.
You know, the symbol for that is from Back to the Future, Doc Brown.
Okay.
Kind of, you know, revolutionary. It's a creator. You know, brands like IDEO, Method Home, Apple are in that. And so Apple really sees themselves as creating revolutionary products that change people's lives.
Yeah.
And so one of the examples that we share in the book was a program that they did around Autism Awareness Month.
Right.
And it highlighted how it highlighted a story of a kid named Dylan Barnash who, through using the iPad and some of the apps on the iPad, now has a way to be able to communicate not only with his family members and the people he loves, but in a way that he can now be accepted when he's in school.
Right. Okay. Cool.
And there's an amazing video if people want, maybe we can attach that to the show notes and I can send it to you, but there's an amazing video that brings that to life. Last example, you know, I'll take one from, again, the top of the pyramid, the eighth archetype, which is the master.
Uh-huh.
And the symbol for the master, Adrian, is the ultimate master. It's Yoda.
Okay.
And a brand that we feel is kind of a prototypical is Warby Parker.
Right.
So here in the U.S., Warby Parker in the last decade has really revolutionized the way that people buy eyewear online.
Mm-hmm.
the overall experience. And right from Jump Street, they were, you know, they were organized in a way that every pair of eyeglasses that you buy through Warby Parker, mm-hmm. one gets distributed to somebody in the developing world.
Right.
And, I mean, we don't realize how impactful access to eyewear can be. You know, if you're an elderly person, it can restore your dignity. If you're a child, it may be the one thing that keeps you from getting an education.
Mm-hmm.
And so what I also love about Warby is that it's not just a donation type of model. Through their partner, what they do is they actually set up distribution.
Right.
And set up businesses for people, so it's a more sustainable model,
right.
of being able to provide eyewear. Yeah, so they're a brand, I think, that speaks to that master archetype.
Yeah, that sounds very similar to Tom's Shoes, which is, a I guess, a similar sort of model.
One for, yeah, exactly. Tom's really revolutionized that one-for-one model.
Yeah. So, Stan, let me ask you the sort of the chicken or egg question, which is kind of this, is that, you know, what comes first? I mean, is it the successful business or the purpose? Or can it be, can you be a successful business and then find a greater purpose? Or is it better to start with a greater purpose that, that will help you become successful? Or can you be both?
Yeah.
Is it a Schrodinger's cat sort of a type of question?
Yeah, it's, I, you know, it's one of those, I love that saying, you know, when's the best time to plant an oak tree? Do you know this?
No.
They say the best time to plant an oak tree was 20 years ago.
Yes.
You know what the second best time is?
Now?
Yeah, today, exactly. So it's that type of thing. I think if you have an opportunity to really, when you're starting out, to be very grounded in your purpose.
Uh-huh.
I mean, that's the optimal way of doing it. You know, we talk about in the book, there's kind of levels that especially for-profit businesses go through,
mm-hmm.
in terms of starting to get aligned with purpose. And it, you know, it all starts with things like corporate social responsibility.
Yeah.
But ideally you want it kind of as part of your DNA.
Mm-hmm.
And at the center of what you do. So we talk about in the book, Adrian, that it used to be that when you went into business, you know, it was an or proposition.
Mm-hmm.
You could be for profit or you could be not for profit.
Yes.
And so the not for profit was all about purpose, but, you know, you would struggle from year to year to make it work.
Mm-hmm.
Whereas if you went the for-profit route, you know, it was all about, at the end of the day, making money, seeking those profits. And I think we live in a world, Adrian, now that people don't have to make that or choice.
Right.
A friend of mine, David Howitt, calls it the tyranny of or. I think we live in a world now where you can embrace what we call the power of and.
Right.
You can be about profit and purpose.
Mm-hmm.
In fact, I think that the brands out there that I think going forward, we look 5 years from now, Adrian, we will no longer segment companies based on their corporate filing status. We will merely look at companies and go, that is a for-purpose company,
mm-hmm.
and that one is a not-for-purpose company.
Okay.
And we're going to want to do work, and we're going to want to do business with, and we're going to want to work for brands that are for purpose.
And so you know, that makes me think about, you know, so a couple of things. I mean, it's there. Do you think, therefore, there's this emerging, I guess, psychographic customer kind of preference that's emerging, which is around, you know, people buy on price, quality, service, experience. But is it also, there's this other sort of thing which is based on purpose as well. So it's like just adding another dynamic to that.
And I think absolutely it's adding another dynamic. I mean, if you think about just customer experience alone,
yeah.
I think Gartner came out with some stats in 2015, 2016 that 89% of companies will compete on the customer experience that they provide. That's going to be the primary thing that they compete on.
Yeah.
And you only had to go back 5 years earlier when they were doing that study.
Mm-hmm.
That number for customer experience was 36%.
Right.
You can see how that's risen.
Mm-hmm.
What we found and what we shared in the book through some of the research, PwC came out with a study that said that 86% of employees would consider leaving the job that they're in, Adrian, if the values of that company no longer meshed with their own.
Right.
And I firmly believe that the values directly flow down from your overall purpose.
Mm-hmm.
And then the other side of it, which is the customer side, here's another 86% stat. This is by a group called Brand Fuel.
Uh-huh.
They said 86% of customers, all things being equal, so price, experience, location, whatever, 86% say they would do business with a brand whose values mesh with their own.
Right.
And so, again, I think it's going to be imperative for companies as they move forward is to, one, understand their purpose, but then also to do the little things, this idea of a red goldfish, these little things that bring that purpose to life.
Yeah. So let's make an assumption that there's, you know, so I'm assuming that there's some people listening to this that are, that believe they're in a for purpose sort of business. And then there will be a whole bunch of people that go, yeah, I'm not so sure. And then
right.
There'll be other ones that go, we have no idea what our purpose is. Now, let's assume, however, they all are interested in this purpose thing, and they want to sort of, you know, examine what they do and how they can do it, and if they can improve on it or start it or augment it or so on and so forth. I mean,
right.
Given that process, I mean, what should they do first? Is it just about sitting down and going, "What are we all about?"
Yeah, I think it's probably a combination of three things. One, Adrian, it's probably going back to the founding of the company.
All right.
And really trying to understand what was the reason, you know, why, what was the inspiration behind the founding of the company.
Uh-huh.
And if you can sit down with the founder, if you have that ability, or if you're the founder yourself, really soul search. What was the trigger?
Uh-huh.
What was the reason for being? And I think that's a great starting point. I think you also talk to your customers, you talk to your employees, and you get a sense for what they stand for.
Right.
And what they're passionate about. And that may help drive or tap into what your purpose is. Or even, how do those two groups see you as a company?
Yeah.
Once I think you have a combination of those three things, you really can sit down and really get to the heart of why you exist.
Okay. So Stan, I mean, that's fascinating to me, because it's a big old kind of undertaking, and I guess it is just about, like you say, it's this little red goldfish, it's the little things. It's just about getting started. I mean,
right.
You're not advocating another transformation sort of program. It's just more of a bit of trying to knit or sew some greater meaning into what you do.
Mm-hmm.
Is that right?
Yeah, I think so. I think again, it's trying to understand what that purpose is and put it at the center of everything you do. I think it used to be in business, again, profit and shareholder was always the first thing that people considered. Maybe they looked at, you know, the next ring out from that bullseye was the customers that they served.
Yeah.
Then maybe they got to the employees in that next ring. And then finally, oh, we need to do something to give back or whatever. And that, we call it almost like greenwashing in the book.
Uh-huh.
You know, they did some type of layer on that outer veneer to kind of create, you know, good PR or, you know, to be a responsible kind of corporate citizen. And I think you actually have to take the exact opposite. You put purpose at that core, You then look to your employees.
Mm-hmm.
You make sure that they're taken care of. They're second. Customers third. And then ultimately, your shareholders are in that, you know, the biggest layer on the outside. They're going to benefit from those prior three kind of priorities.
Okay. So, Stan, I'm just going to, as just keeping an eye on time and just thinking about kind of what we talked about, and also don't want to give, obviously, the secrets, all of the secrets of the book away. But before I ask you the sort of two questions I generally ask at the end of these interviews, is there anything you think that you'd like to highlight that we've missed out from the book?
No, I mean, I think it's a good, I think we've had a good conversation. I'm hoping that this book will inspire people to think about which archetype that they fit into.
Mm-hmm.
And then more importantly, you know, words don't count as much as actions.
Sure.
And so again, I'm hoping to inspire people to think about, all right, what do we physically do for both our employees and our customers to bring that purpose to life?
Excellent. So that brings me to my last two questions, Stan. And my first one is a little bit of a selfish one, and it's a little bit of market research as well on my own part. Because as you know, I wrote this book that came out last year called How to Wow. And what I've been doing is, at the end of every interview, I've been asking people to share their own perspective, what wow service or wow experience is to them. So it'd be fantastic if you could share your perspective on that.
Well, you and I are simpatico on this. We have the exact same thing. Just merely meeting expectations is enough. You need to consciously do that little something extra to be able to wow your customer. And it just doesn't have to be delight. It could be something that you do to make it easier for them to do business with you. So I have an acronym that I use called RULES.
Uh-huh.
So whatever you do needs to be relevant. The U is in rules is unexpected.
Right.
The L is limited, meaning that it needs to be unique. It can't be something that everyone else does. E is expression. So whatever you do needs to be authentic. A lot of times it's not what you do, it's how you do it.
Mm-hmm.
And lastly, the S in rules. So we've had relevant, unexpected, limited, expression.
Mm-hmm.
The S is for sticky.
Right.
And part of the reason why you do this is you want to take care of the customers you have so that they bring you the customers that you want. And so doing something so it sticks out and becomes memorable is key. So that's the rules.
So that's fantastic. I love that. That's great.
Yeah.
So, Stan, this brings me to my last question that I always ask at the end of these interviews, and I think you know it, but I'm going to ask it again. And that is there anything that you'd like to shamelessly plug?
Graham Newell and I spent a lot of time over 15 months collecting these examples, pulling out the best ones for the book. So I would hope if people are interested in learning more, they can go to Amazon, just search Red Goldfish. I also have a great slide share.
Mm-hmm.
If you're a fan of slide share, I'm a very visual person, so there's a good slide share on Red Goldfish. And again, shamelessly plug the book, pick it up. Hopefully there'll be ideas that you can use to create more passion and purpose within your business.
Fantastic. Stan, I will make sure I get all that sort of linked up to Amazon and to SlideShare and to your own website and everything else. But I just want to say, first, congratulations on the next in the series. I think it's a great piece of work, fantastic research, and, you know, helping people unpick and understand this sort of emerging kind of issue or this growing issue, both amongst employees, customers, and just general business and businesses in general. But also, finally, just want to say thank you for sharing your time and your insight and your experience with us today. That's been fantastic.
Cheers. Thanks, Adrian, for having me.